Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Night Shadows. I'm Stuart Best, where the paranormal is normal, where that which you thought you knew, you didn't, and where the future can be known if you know exactly where to look.
Well, good evening, everyone, and I've got Larry on the line, and Barry had to run to get out of the way of the hurricane, so we're going to try and call him up. Hi, Larry, how are you doing?
Oh, okay. This sure is staticky today, though. It's like not a good connection or something. I don't know.
Yeah, you're very badly broken up. Maybe try and call back in if you could.
Yeah, I'll get off and then call back.
Okay. Anyway, folks, thanks for tuning in and listening, and we've got, hopefully we can get Barry on the line, and as soon as Larry's back on, I will try once again to, and then I'll call Barry and see if I can get him. All kinds of glitches in the system, as you know. We've had solar activity that is messing up just about everything, even on the web. Very, very difficult to get good connections, et cetera, et cetera. So wait just a minute here. We'll see if we can get Larry back on. Hello, Larry. How are you doing?
Oh, this is much better. Yeah, I can hear you better.
Okay, now I'm going to try and get Barry online for us, but it may take a little while. What's the latest while we're waiting? Oh, here he goes.
Howdy.
Hi, Barry. How are you doing?
Well, I'm having a fun evacuation from the hurricane. We, as you heard, we decided rather than take our chances in Cape Canaveral, we flew off to Puerto Rico, where the hurricane had just missed, and you know, went on a nice tour of the Arecibo Radio Telescope today. How are you doing?
Well, pretty good. And we got Larry on. So, Larry.
Yeah, hi, Barry. So glad to have you. Hopefully this communication network will hold together during the show.
I'm hoping. If not, then blame it on the hurricane or whatever. The shot.
Okay.
I have to thank my wife because she reminded me. You know, I mean, the decision to evacuate was made the night before I flew out, like 1 o'clock in the morning. And I found a couple of decent tickets, actually three, because I took my son down here also. And we've just been seeing things that I wanted to see all my life. So at any rate, she remembered. She reminded me before to call, but to try to find the hotels and get the rental car and everything else last minute was trying somewhat to a certain extent. What you guys want to talk about tonight?
Well, I know you've been doing a number of Bible codes, and I just wanted to read something you posted, actually, July 20th. The scientific hunt is on for a mirror universe. Figure 1 appears to be one of the most important matrices that I have found in 22 years of Torah codes research. Existing against odds of over 13 billion to 1, it appears to prove two things. The Torah code is real. Of course, we've known that. And there are parallel worlds and universes associated with a 1.8 billion year wide cold spot in space discovered in 2015, and it's missing an estimated 10,000 galaxies. Could you elaborate on that for us a little bit, what you found?
Well, let me describe the matrix first of all. I haven't looked at this thing for a little while, but the axis term is a long one. And I'm seeing the word cold first, and then in sequence with it is mirror world or a universe that comes up. So, yeah, this was a relatively new discovery, and apparently you look off in any direction in space, you see galaxies. But there's one direction, I guess, where, you know, scientists were looking off and they were missing, the 10,000 galaxies. And, you know, each galaxy's got probably an average of 100 billion to 300 billion stars.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the cold spot was there. And I guess the scientists who had done this study originally had decided, well, maybe they've shifted into a close universe, but one is parallel. Every time there's a possibility of two decisions or two possible outcomes, you know, there's a theory in science or a hypothesis, at any rate, that you get a parallel universe. Schrodinger's cat is famous, for illustrating the possibility. You have a cat, fits in a box. You've got a radioactive isotope in it, and there's some cyanide, some poison or arsenic or whatever. And if the isotope decays in a certain period of time, then when the neutron flies off, or it winds up hitting the poison, opening the poison, or exposing the poison to the cat, cat dies. Otherwise, if it doesn't decay, the cat's alive. And they're saying actually, you don't really know which it is, but there are two universes that can exist, one in which the cat's alive, one in which the cat's dead. So that's part of it. So this matrix had, normally I don't find in sequence more than eight letters at an ELS, and an ELS is an equidistant letter sequence,
right,
which means that, if you're looking for the word mirror world, if you were doing it in English, and it only works in Hebrew, but let's say it was 1,000 letters from the M of mirror to the I, another 1,000 letters to the R, another 1,000 letters to the next R, another 1,000 letters to the O, and so forth like that. So that's an ELS. And in this particular matrix, what is at the same skip, which is what I look at or look for when I have something like this, what's at the same skip, the first word I see is neutron. So both mirror world and universe are at skip minus 55,715. That means that it's exactly 55,715 letters between each letter of those terms. The minus means that the words go backwards, meaning that, as you go down the page, you're going earlier in the Torah rather than later in the Torah. Another word that's at the same skip is spot. So we're talking about, in this new finding, a cold spot. The word cold is at skip one. So
wow.
I like, and more than that, there's another term here, matter, which is at the same skip as mirror world, universe, and neutron, and spot. And that word is matter, 55,715 letters. Another word at the same skip is temperature, 55,715. Another word is reversal. And then one skip off of that is time. So instead of 55,715, it's 55,716. Zero is at skip minus one. Let me see what else is on here. There's a mixing, the cold, there's another cold, and then there's a field over here. So looking at the probability spreadsheet for having all of this, except for the word field, encoded in 644 letters, the odds against that, my God, it's such a huge number over here. If you would write this down, then you could, well, I think I can figure it out, but the numbers are 1340734882. So let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, it's like 1.3 billion to one against that you would have all of this material that relates to this this finding so close together. And, I'm looking, if I added another word, then that changed the odds a little bit. But it was enough. I just don't see odds like that normally. And it's like a clear message that, this is the nature of the universe, and I'm seeing on the article, and I hadn't looked at it for a while, Schrodinger's cat. but it's kind of a confirmation of what they're talking about. I'm looking down now.
Yeah, we live in a multiverse,
yeah. Yeah, so there's a setup for a cold neutron disappearance regeneration experiment. So apparently the guys who came up with the original article, you know, they devised this, this system, and you have mirrors, you have a neutron detector on, in the center. To the left is the B control, that's the field control, and then a flux monitor, and then there's a cold neutron source, and then go on the right side, another B field control and a neutron detector. So I think what was going on, as I think back on the experiment, it's explained in the article, is that not all the neutrons were coming out that were going in. And it was a question of where they were going and where they were disappearing to. And apparently that was an indication that, you know, some of this matter that's missing in space may have actually shifted into a parallel universe. Looking down the article, I see another one, another matrix over here. And the axis term here was dark matter to be killed. And that was at skip 94,668. There's at the same skip was to the past. And when I look at a chart here that shows the amount of matter in the universe, 13.7 billion years ago, when according to scientists, the universe was created, the universe was 63% dark matter. Now, scientists are arguing about what dark matter is. But
right.
Today, the dark matter is down to 23%. So the code seemed to predict that the dark matter would be killed off with time. Dark energy back then wasn't even on the chart. Now it's 72%. In terms of regular atoms, that was 12%, and it's down to 4.6% of the universe right now, which means, I mean, it was 5%. It's like saying you're trying to read a book and you can only read one word out of 20. We're trying to understand the universe, and when we look at regular matter, it's only 4.6% of the universe. So that's a problem for a lot of scientists. They had a lot of photons originally with 15% of the universe. That's not on the chart today. Crossing this this term, dark matter to be killed, in the open text is, let me see, wormhole. Shares a letter with dark matter to be killed. And, you know, wormholes, some people think that you can be transported from one universe either to another place, or from one place in the universe to another place
right.
in the universe, or even another universe through a wormhole. So that word wormhole goes directly through this ELS. And I think even additionally interesting about this article here is that it's got in the open text, God in the seventh day finished the work which he had made and rested. And so you have a reference in the open text to the work that God went through in creating the universe. Flowing from the second letter of that vertically that one is to the past. So, on the open text, flowing from to the past is world or universe. So there seemed to be a good bit of repetitive material on that one, which kind of backed the idea that we're talking about over here. So that's what that's about. It looks like, you know, a lot of times whatever we look for in science, we can find encoded in the Torah against incredible odds. Next question.
Well, yeah, curious because Larry, go ahead if you got a question.
If you want to go ahead and question that, I've just got another code I want to run by him that might be similar or something interesting.
Yeah, go ahead.
Barry, back in the seventh month, 8th of 2018, you ran a really interesting Torah code. It was called, or question says, why this unclassified report? And it's photo 2.
Okay, just give me the date of the article.
Oh, okay, it's 7-8-2018. And it's got and you made the comment, said U.S. Air Force report teleportation physics study by the warp drive metrics, and why is this an unclassified report?
Well, hold on one. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Hold on a second. Let me see if I can find it over here.
That's
okay.
Okay. So
yeah,
that
because the terms in the matrix are really interesting and kind of blend into what you were just describing a little bit.
All right. One second. Let me put a word unclassified. All right. What was that month again?
It was 7/2018, and the words in it are UFO teleport, beam, matter, energy for aliens.
All right. Hold on a second. Seven, eight. So this was July the 8th?
Uh-huh, 2018.
2018.
I've got the address if you want it on your location on the computer.
All right, let's try that.
Okay, it's arcode.com/photo2-19.
Photo2-19. Okay, hold on a second. Photo2.
Well, you did a series on time travelers, too, which kind of dovetails into this.
Photo2.
Yeah, underscore. Photo2_19. .html.
.html. Okay, I got it. All right. So let's see what's here. All right, so I see the access term, and I skip 2002, is UFO teleport. And I see that at skip one is for aliens. The other terms, beam, matter, and energy, are not at special case skips. So it's basically it's UFO teleport and then aliens are together in a significant way. And looking at the probability calculation, the main term that was of interest, I don't count the axis term, which is UFO teleport. So the term that was statistically significant against odds of 116 approximately to 1 was aliens, at skip 1 over there. All right, so that's the first thing that's on the matrix. Now, skipping down, okay, we have the Air Force report, teleportation physics study. It's by Eric W. Davis. And at the time, he was employed with Warp Drive Metrics at 4849 San Rafael Avenue in Las Vegas, Nevada. But this is an Air Force publication, and it comes out of the Air Force Research Laboratory, the Air Force Material Command at Edwards Air Force Base. So looking at the article over here, just skimming down through it, the first thing, I know of this Eric Davis guy. He wrote a book, a Breakthrough Propulsion Physics, or at least he edited it, which was the textbook in terms of possibilities of flying anywhere near the speed of light, breakthrough propulsion technology, or even beyond the speed of light. It's about a 750-page book. And my son, David, when he was just leaving high school, outlined the entire textbook and put the outline of each chapter on the davidarothman.com website. So we became familiar with this guy. In the report, what I'm looking at over here, figure 5, I think is what you're referring to. It's on page 56 of the Air Force report, and it says the following in it. Most claimed instances of human teleportation of the body from one place to another have been unwitnessed. There are a small number of credible reports of individuals who reported being teleported to or from UFOs during a UFO close encounter. which were scientifically investigated. Sally is the guy who wrote the thing, 1988, 1999, 1997. But there are a large number of such reports that are anecdotal, whereby the witness data tends to be unreliable. However, we will confine our discussion to the controlled laboratory experiments that have been performed and reported. So, you know, the guys that were associated with this report, you know, were serious scientists. And here they're saying that the Air Force investigated a number of cases in which people were supposedly teleported to and from the Earth, and they found them credible reports. And the reason I asked, as you mentioned originally, why is this report unclassified? That would seem like, if it's true, you know, that it should be highly classified. And yet somehow it slipped through the weeds or the works, whatever, I guess, whoever went along with publishing this stuff probably just figured these were valid scientists and didn't read every word in detail. But I did, and the report is right there on that article, UFO Teleport Beam and an Air Force Report. And you're right, published 7-8-2018. So it's there. Let me see if there's now some of the people that are mentioned in this report are people that I either know or know of. One that's mentioned I know is Colonel John Alexander, who's got a real interesting background in terms of working on ability to the technology to implant information in people's minds from orbiting vehicles or space vehicles. Strange guy. And then there's a good friend of mine, Commander Scott, C.B. Scott Jones, that I recognized when I read through the report that some of this was his words. I asked him, he said, yeah, there's a guy that was the top assistant of Senator Claiborne Pell, who was the head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. So Jones would fly around to Russia or China from Washington and talk to the Russians and the Chinese about UFO encounters, what they had, and so forth. And, you know, he was part of a group that was known as the Aviary, these guys that did this crazy research. Hal Putoff is in the report. Hal Putoff is a close friend of Scott Jones and Colonel Alexander. I've only spoken to Putoff, I think, before my son went off to get his doctorate, when my son was still in, in high school. Son has a doctorate in physics now. And we were talking about the possibility at one time of David going off to work for him, but he's got a good job near me in Cape Canaveral, so I'm happy with where he is right now. All right, anything else I can tell you about this?
No, well, that's kind of interesting. Yeah, go ahead, Larry. Go ahead. Oh no, I was just going to say that's really interesting and interesting information, and I find it rather telling that it is unclassified and in the code. So, go ahead, Stuart.
Well, I was just. Did you ever see the movie Fire in the Sky?
Yes.
So that was a teleportation, and on the way that they're saying it, and there have been a number of rumors about teleportation. When I was flying for the General Electric Company, now this is well over 40 years ago, and one of their scientists who happened to be on board, a lot of them come up front and they sit in the jump seat, and he was talking about teleportation experiments even back then. So this is not a new thing, so they must be working on this right along. How does this dovetail in your mind over to CERN and what CERN is doing about trying to punch holes into other dimensions?
Okay, hold on a second. First of all, before I do anything else, I want to give you the date of this teleportation physics study. August 2004. So August 2004 is when the Air Force came out with this study. Now, I don't see any reason why, but I could be missing an awful lot, you know, obviously here. They would just be starting to study this when, they already had some answers. However, you know, there's all kinds of levels of classification and people that are exposed to all kinds of stuff. So I'm sure that my buddies at Fort Huachuca are going to listen to this. they always do. You know, they follow everything I do. And as I think I described in an earlier show, you know, they had contacted me on August the 1st, 2016, actually followed me to the Cape Canaveral Library when I went off there and interviewed me for about a half an hour in a very strange way. And some of the things that happened during that interview was one of the things that happened was they gave me some information about my son that was not true at the time. It was not known to be significant at the time. And then 4 months later, he got into it. The guy who interviewed me, and we've discussed this before, started to ask me about the standing. He just was waiting for me in the parking lot and when I came out of the library. He started to ask me about nanotechnology and artificial intelligence. And I had just checked out a book on that a couple seconds before, you know, before walking out there. And you know, it was a really strange conversation, but he went off to actually give me information about David. You know, the interest in artificial intelligence didn't make any, the questions did not make any sense to me initially. But nanotechnology, David had just gotten his PhD with his thesis on nanotechnology. So, you know, after a while, I began to see, well, it kind of looks like he has some information from the future. And, you know, Fort Huachuca reviews that article many times. As you know, Larry had published the original matrix I had on that, which had the name of the man who did the interview, who interviewed me. And later I asked Larry to remove it because I was not exactly sure of the safety of the situation. But I suspect that, you know, there are layers upon layers upon layers, you know, that are covering up what the full truth is. And, you know, in the end, it comes down to a question of were the codes created by God or were they created by something like an AI in the future and that managed to get the signal into the past? There are a lot of serious questions here. And, you know, the answers I'm still looking for. But, yeah, so you get a report like this that's unclassified, you know, the Davis report, the Air Force report, and they may be trying to leak something. They may be want to see who bites at it and what happens from putting it in there. But I don't have the final answers on that. I can only say that these questions are discussed in the Torah. The terms are there. They're encoded together in significant terms, in terms of significant, you know, probabilities. But boy, the whole truth behind the whole thing. You know, I'm 72. I don't know if I'll see it in my lifetime, but there's some serious stuff that's going on here. That's all I can say. All right, go ahead.
Okay. Well, where do you want to go, Larry? You got another one you want to talk about?
Yeah, Barry, on August the 12th, 2019, you wrote a Torah code, actually two matrixes, death of Jeff Epstein, suicide or murder, ? And
got it.
Yeah, you want to go through that? And what's your opinion on Epstein and what really occurred, maybe? I know you don't really know, maybe, but what do you think about that whole scenario?
Well, I'll tell you what the code says on it, first of all. All right, the first matrix that's on that article, the axis term is Epstein. Now, the T in Epstein is a T in Clinton. And Clinton is encoded right through Epstein's name at skip minus one. So in other words, it's like writing Clinton backwards. It only takes seven rows for Epstein by five columns for Clinton, 35 letters, to put Epstein and Clinton together in a box. Now, as we continue to look a little bit more on that one, on the line above Clinton, it says in the Hebrew, man who lies with the woman. So we have a direct reference to sexual behavior going on there that touches Clinton on three letters and shares a letter with Epstein and is in the open text. Now, if we go to the first letter of Epstein and we go three letters to the left of it, the word that comes up, Yalda, is girl. So we're not talking about sex with women here. We're talking about sex with girls. At the same tip of Epstein is the word, let me see what this is over here, orgy, zima in Hebrew. And that's so Epstein is encoded at skip 127,240. Zima is at minus 127,240, which means, you know, it's at the same absolute skip, but it runs in the opposite direction. Then we also have on the top line of this matrix, the island, skip one. And, of course, Epstein has the famous island down there, had it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another word over here also, but it's, let me see what that one is. And that's not that significant. I think, let me see where, here it is. Oh, trafficking. But it wasn't at a significant skip, but he's obviously doing sexual chat. So on the description of the matrix, I point out that Bill Clinton had flown with, on the pedophile's jet more than two dozen times. I think it's 20. You'd say I've heard 26 or 27 times Clinton flew on Epstein's jet. So Bill Clinton. So obviously, there was a great friendship there, but even stranger. And this actually is not on this matrix. It was on this article. It came a little bit later, a couple days later. Let me see how many days later it was. August the 18th. Portrait of Bill Clinton in Monica's blue dress at Epstein's New York home. So on that matrix, a couple days later, I don't know if you heard about this or not, in Epstein's New York home, in the right when you walk in the door on the right side, you know, there is a portrait of Bill Clinton, and he's sitting in a blue dress, not Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton is sitting in the famous blue dress. He's showing his legs. He's got some ruby red shoes on over here, and this is the blue dress with the semen stains where he got, impeached, although not convicted. On that matrix, the axis term is Epstein again. And the word that goes directly through Epstein's name, Mistrachem, which is prison. And obviously, Epstein was in prison when he got killed. Then three lines below that, again, we have Clinton at skip minus one share a letter with Epstein's name, but it's the nun, the N instead of the T this time. But Clinton at skip one goes right through Epstein's name, and so does prison. Then we have at skip one also in the open text, Tamuna, which is painting or portrait. So, I show the portrait, in the article. And then we have at skip one, Simla, which is dress. So he's in the blue dress. And we have at skip minus one, Yitzhak, which is murdered. So this particular matrix, which occurs against odds of, let me see what it is over here. There's two ways I calculated this. Let me look at the calculation here. All right. One of them, 752 letters. In one of them, the calculation, the final significance was 7,114,354 to one against having this exist. There was another calculation I did on here, and it was not quite as high, but it had... Okay, a little larger matrix included the word virgin. I don't know how many virgins Epstein went through, but I'm sure it was a number of them. However, that required 1,136 letters, and so the significance of that one was, looks like 8,952,678 to one against. So going back to the previous matrix that you had mentioned, the suicide or murder one, let me see if there's anything else significant there in that article. Here's another matrix where Epstein is the axis term at the same skip as B. Obama. And that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
What's Obama doing on this thing? We also have on this matrix Clinton is skip minus one, but he does, in this case, Clinton does not share a letter with Epstein. Go back there. Okay. And in the open text on this matrix, we had he had to file his daughter, Dina. So this is a story of, I guess it was Jacob's daughter, Dina, was defiled, whether it was rape or not, whatever, by by the guy from the town of, Shechem. And basically there was a deal that was reached between Jacob and the people in Hamor, I think it was, the father of the guy that raped Jacob's daughter, where all the people in Shechem's town, in town of Shechem, whatever, all those people would be circumcised, and there would be a joining of Jacob's family with them. They would share, you know, land, animals, wives, and trade off, and so I'm not sure wives, but you know, fix up sons with wives from each tribe. And on the, I think it was the third day when the people were in most pain from the circumcision, Simeon and Levi came into town and killed everybody and took everything. And Jacob was pretty upset about that. He gave me a bad name. But at any rate, that incident is all referred to in this matrix with Epstein and B. Obama, Clinton, and Clinton, and so forth. So in terms of why B. Obama is on there, I go into that in the order, in the matrix, in the discussion somewhat. And, of course, you know, Obama, one of the guys, you know, big guy in the establishment, may have wanted to shut everything down, and he may have had something to fear in terms of what Epstein could reduce. Epstein knew an awful lot about a lot of people. So B. Obama may have been part of the desire to shut him up. I suspect murder over here. The Matrix kind of hints at it. Obviously, everybody knows how strange all the conditions were. But it may have been a murder. It could have been a murder where Epstein was fine with it because he had nothing to look forward to. So, you know, do me a favor and take my life. Obviously, and then the prison guards, you know, not looking, the cameras are not on, everybody's asleep, and you know, he just tried to commit suicide before, supposedly, and so he's not on suicide watch. A lot of rotten stuff going on here, but when you look at Bill Clinton, you know, I mean, what possible good, valid reason could there be for him to be on Epstein's jet 27 times or so? Guys are creeps. I think his wife is too. That's just my opinion. But we're not looking at good people here. All right. Next question.
Okay. You've got a. You said we have solid evidence that points to life on Mars.
Okay. Yeah.
And I know you wanted to speak about that one.
Yeah, I think that's something. I mean, it could be almost a separate show, but I can cover it well enough here. I've been pissed at NASA for a long time. I think they're lying through their teeth to us, and I got so angry that I decided to do something about it. And what was I going? You know, I live in Cape Canaveral, so I mean, you know, we send rockets to Mars. They're coming from in front of my condo, but. I decided that I would fly out to Mountain View, California, which is in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I would make a scene at NASA Ames because I knew what kind of stuff was going on, and I knew, you know, how much the government's covered up and so forth. So It sounded like a crazy idea. I literally went out and I walked in to get a pass for the base, and you know, I wanted to see somebody from public relations that started my research, got my research going on Mars 12 years ago, and made a heck of a scene. Didn't get to meet the people I wanted to that day, but I wanted to make sure they knew how angry I was and what I had. They took my military ID. You know, I actually wound up staying on the base that night. Not a Navy lodge, which I had stayed at the previous two nights, but a NASA lodge on the base. Wasn't the greatest room in the world, I'll say that much. So, like the day after I do all this stuff arranged for, I get an email. And the email is from the Journal of Astrobiology. It was addressed to Dr. Rothman, who's my son, but it came to me. And crazy thing was that they had just gotten contacted by Dr. Ron Gabriel Joseph, and they want those and him and Regina Das, V. Rizzo, N. Cantasano, and Giancarlo Biancardi. So GB and Cardi all had this article, Evidence of Life on Mars? Question mark. And they had a lot of pictures from our landers, especially the Mars Science Laboratory and from the Mars Opportunity, the rover,
mm-hmm.
that showed what looked like life on Mars. And we're talking about fungi called puffballs, bacteria, algae.
Mm-hmm.
There was cyanobacteria and algae. And some of these pictures were spectacular, and they worked directly from NASA. And I had seen some of them, and I had discussed some of them before. So what was going on here? With David, I had on, I think it was September 3rd of 2017, I had done a radio show, or actually a TV broadcast, the kind of thing, for the web. I was interviewed for 3 hours and 42 minutes by people who were largely Italians. Three of these scientists on this article are Italians. I think it's Rizzo, Cantasano, and Biancardi. So those guys saw my broadcast and saw my son on it. My son at the time was going through his postdoc at Yale. And I was the primary speaker, and I showed some green balls that were seen on Mars that were perfect spheres, and I'd done a lot of research on them, got their altitude in terms of or the elevation that they were seen and the temperatures around them at the time, and they looked like life. It looked like something was reproducing and was photosynthetic. So these guys, they came up with this article, and when they went to the Journal of Astrobiology and said they wanted to publish it, they said, it's got to, they told them, of course, it's got to be peer-reviewed. So I couldn't do it because I don't have a PhD, but my son could. However, I'd been the primary writer of the stuff all along, and David was part of everything, but he did mostly the math end of what was there. So, and they said, okay, he's got to write it. So I said, okay. But, we took the information largely out of our Mars Correct report, which is questioning all the NASA meteorological data for Mars.
Mm-hmm.
So he wrote the report with me, and, a review of this article. So that's the first thing they asked us to do, was review the article. So we reviewed their article. In particular, their figure 8 showed 6 of these balls, or these spheres, to start off with. And let me come down to the picture over here. So I want to get you. Okay, figure 8. Started out on Sol 1145 of which is Martian Day 1145 of the Mars Science, of the Opportunity rover, There were six balls together, six circular spherical things. 3 days later, they look at the same site, and that number had increased to 15. The ones that were there before had grown, and we had 9 new balls appear. So we had what looked like both growth and reproduction going on.
Mm-hmm.
So when we reviewed the article, you know, we said, okay, this looks like solid proof of life to us. And NASA wanted to fight it. And they wanted to fight it by using an alternate explanation to growth and reproduction. And they said the alternate explanation was it was uncovered hematite, which had been buried beneath sand and dirt. So they're saying after 3 days, the wind was strong enough to uncover these additional balls or, you know, more of what was shown originally. And we were immediately able to refute that. So the article that we wrote was Meteorological Implications, Evidence of Life on Mars. And basically what we showed, we went to their argument about the wind uncovering the objects there. And we said, hey, according to what you said before, NASA, you're not going to have that be possible because it would take winds of like 80 miles an hour to do that, and the winds have never been recorded on Mars and so high because the density of the Martian atmosphere was so low. You know, they think the average density of the Martian atmosphere or average pressure is 6.1 pressure, not density, 6.1 millibars compared to 1,000 13.25 on Earth. If you've been tracking the hurricane on TV, Dorian, it went down to as low as 910 millibars. Normally our pressure again is 1,013.25, so it went down over 100 millibars. So we look at these millibars, and on Mars is supposed to be 6.1. Based on 6.1, unless the winds are up at really very high speeds, you're not going to get the movement of the sand. You just don't have enough oomph there in the wind at that density to move it. And we published what the previous record for winds were that were observed by Viking 1. And the maximum winds seen by Viking 1, I'm looking at the figure here right now, let me see. It should have 51.9 miles per hour. Let's see on figure two. I'm sorry, 57.9 miles per hour, figure one. So in other words, the wind never in the course of several years of observation at Viking 1 and 2 never got above basically 57.9 miles per hour. So it was never strong enough to move sand. And for a long time, NASA said the sand's not moving. Then they started admitting and showing, yeah, the sand moves plenty on Mars. You've got giant Barkhan dunes. They're moving. And a lot of other things are moving. So I said, one of two things is true. Either the density of the Martian atmosphere is more than NASA has admitted to, because you couldn't have the sand move at the densities they're talking about, or, you know, you've got life over there, which whatever the pressure is able to grow and reproduce. But this is not, you know, if the sand is being uncovered, it's only because the density is higher. And even then, looking at the rest of the data, that it appears to be the pictures that NASA released appeared to show growth on both the Mars Science Laboratory and also on the Opportunity rover. So, at any rate, NASA came, or this Journal of Astrobiology came to us and said, give us a couple thousand words. It wound up being about 2,900 words. So that was David's article, which again was Meteorological Implications, Evidence of Life on Mars, the original article by Joseph et al., That one was evidence of life on Mars. And these were officially published in June of this year in the Journal of Astrobiology, although there were online versions starting 2 weeks after my trip to California. Because the invocation came in right then. All right, we're not going to try to shut us up completely anymore. But we thought that by June, when the official publication date came around, there would be no question that life had been found, and there would be a big announcement. But there wasn't. Instead, NASA continued to publish articles that kind of suggested life on Mars. But there was no spotlight thrown on what we had found and published. And I think that, again, is because, I know why it is, because as I started to write the article with David, and, you know, he started to work on it and so forth, I found that what the journal was doing was asking us to insert things in actual words in the report that were contrary to our findings, that morphology is not, which is, you know, the shape of something, is not proof of life on Mars, even if it looks like something. There were a lot of scientists who reviewed the findings, and almost everybody said, this is life on Mars. All the people who specialize in fungi and bacteria and geology, everything we were showing, it was life, as far as just about 95%. Of scientists who looked at it thought. So they wanted us to put these words in, and they got so negative that I actually asked David, and he went along with it. You know, we contacted the journal and tell us we cannot, in good conscience, publish our article with the changes that you suggest. We don't want to participate in it, as nice as it is to get published, unless you give us a lot more wiggle room. And then they came back and said, oh, well, yeah, we want you to publish and we'll give you more wiggle room. And so they did to a great extent. But I'm looking at our conclusion right now. And this is how the article concludes. Let me come down here and pull it up. Whoops, wrong one.
Your Bible code on that, or Torah code, came out on that one, I guess.
Yeah, I'll get that for that in a second. I'm just going to go with this. Conclusion, evidence provided by five Mars landers favors the probability of life. This was their words. Unfortunately, as stressed by Joseph et al., the evidence is circumstantial and similarities in morphology are not proof. They put those same damn words in the Joseph article, and then they put it in our article. You know, but I went on to say, future robotic missions should take equipment like the miniature variable pressure scanning electron microscope for in-situ imaging and chemical analysis, the most promising sites. In other words, we have to be able to look with an electron microscope at what was found. So we don't need to go to some other place to look for life on Mars. We have it on the two landers that are there right now, or two of the landers that are there right now, one lander still functioning. But we need to go back and we need to scoop up some of that stuff, scrape it right off the lander. We know exactly where those balls were found also, exactly what solid were found with the Mars Science Laboratory also, just like Opportunity. I wrote, only then can we begin to make a determination as to if the specimens photographed on the Martian ground are oddly shaped sedimentary structures or evidence of life. Likewise, we must determine the exact nature of what appears to be growth on Opportunity and Curiosity. So that's how it finished up. But the whole sentence about this unfortunately, but they had originally three unfortunately's in one sentence. And that was not my sentiments at all. We were very excited. Okay, so now you had a question about the...
Well, you ran a code on it. Yeah, you ran a code. It says Mars life sphere from Earth... Russian atomic contamination sphere twice.
Okay, what is the date of that?
Let me see if I can find it. I don't think.
Go back here. It would have been somewhere between March, I guess, and the June. Yeah, here it is, July 12th. What are those green spheres on Mars? Contamination? Question mark. All right. So on this one, I show the sphere and the photograph next to the matrix. Yeah, the matrix Mars. Yeah, Mars life. And at the same skip as sphere. So I mean, it was standing right there. Which is these spheres? That's Martian life. What you're getting these pictures of? And then we also had from Earth. And we have a word for contamination. Now, the question is, okay, how can you get contamination from Earth? All right, a few ways.
Well, we're there.
Hey, at some point in the past, an asteroid hit the Earth. And just like asteroids have knocked meteorites from Mars and sent them to Earth, you know, when they hit on Mars. Mm-hmm. The same way, something hit on Earth way back was a big explosion. Or you could have had a nuclear test like the Russian test at Nova Zemlya, which was about 57 megatons. You know, that could have gotten the spores high enough above our atmosphere or in our atmosphere that the solar wind would then pick it up and take the spores to Mars. Then those spores would grow when they got to Mars. Or you could have had contamination starting with the Mars 3, which is the only Russian rocket to land on Mars. It only operated for 8 seconds before it went dead. This was back in the late 60s or so. Mm-hmm. But it cried, but when it landed in a dust storm, a global dust storm. So you could have had the spores from that rocket, you know, spread around the planet, and during a dust storm it would quickly go every place and start growth. You know, or it could be a contamination we're looking at from the sphere. I'm sorry, from the more recent landers. You know, that got up there. But this matrix, yeah, it also had, it had Russian on it at skip minus one. The skips that I like to see are plus or minus one for the words that I'm looking for a priori. In other words, I'm guessing they're going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Or I like to see the special terms at the same skip as the axis term. So if the axis term is at skip 10,000, then I want to see words like ball at 10,000 or at minus 10,000. That was on the matrix, as was contamination, as was, again, the sphere. So it was all kind of there saying that, yeah, this is what's going on, that we're looking at contamination of Earth. Doesn't mean there's not life that evolved on Mars, but the Terra Code matrix and the fact that we're looking at bacteria, at lichens, at algae, at fungi, things that are from the that grow on Earth. Is suggestive to me that while there may be other life on Mars, that clearly Mars got contaminated from something that came from Earth. Most scientists think it's solar wind pushed stuff out there, but it could have been a lander. And there are some other things on this matrix, too, that that relate to that. Some less spectacular matches, but nonetheless there. Okay. Got a couple minutes left, I think. What else we got?
About them. What else you got, Larry? Quick.
Well, I was just going to see what Barry might want to just close in the show with, if he's got something he wants to talk about or announce.
Boy, here I tell you, you know, I'm sitting in Puerto Rico, you know, having fun during this evacuation. I kind of wasn't thinking about it in the last week. Let me go back real fast. And see the menu for what recently has been on this site, or what I've published recently. 1 second here, let me get it open. Okay, here, site builder. All right, and we'll see what I've put up most recently. This is the second homepage view. No time is preciously running out here right now.
Well, we'll have to have you back.
Well, some of the things I've done most recently relate to the whole Epstein thing. Michelle Obama might decide to run for, even though she said she wouldn't, might run for president.
Mm-hmm.
I also have been looking at the question of Trump talking about anti-Semitism and the problem with Democrats, and I agree with him. Any Jew votes Democratic is as a traitor to the religion. He's certainly no friend of Israel, and frankly, I don't think too much of him in terms of loyalty to the United States. I'm not a fan of the Democrats right now. They've gone insane, I think, in my opinion, lately.
Yeah.
But that's about the end of the show. I could go into more, and I probably piss off a lot of people. But
okay, well, thanks a lot for coming on, Barry and Larry, and we'll try and get you back as soon as we can. Thanks,
sounds
Barry.
Good to me. Okay. All right, thanks
okay.
a lot, guys.
Yep. Bye.
Thanks.